Welcome to episode 30 of the Pokemon Gold podcast.
Oh, it's a beautiful goal, isn't it? A beautiful goal.
What a save!
Messi enganchó como le gusta el probo con zurda.
Morta again, another time, the shot on the foot of it!
Oh, what a goal! What a goal that is!
What a goal from David Beckham!
Oh, Zinedine, la passa!
Different class.
My name is James Carew, co-editor of Pokemon Goal, Ireland's only football publication, which explores football culture from around the world with Irish and international contributors. Visit pokemongoal.bigcartel.com to see a discount clearance sale on issue 8 of the magazine, plus a whole host of other Christmas gift ideas, including scarves, sweatshirts, and footballs. On today's episode, I'm joined by Matt Lidbury, a former newspaper picture editor and the man behind Lower Block, which through its social accounts, online photo features, and perhaps more importantly, printed photo zines, looks to document and curate various subcultures around the game, much more than just the action on the pitch.
Requires intense concentration for 2 hours.
First times I was only with the pocket camera. I love making pictures of the fans.
All the other photographers at the game are shooting the other way.
Some interesting characters up there.
The Leicester baby squad.
We looked for people who dressed like us.
His rebellion came in the form of football.
Here comes Best again. What a player this boy is. He's got another. The boy with the beetle haircut.
Here we are in Milan, Italy. It's standing in the middle of the San Siro stadium.
Diego Maradona mural.
Rete, Maradona.
Absolutely mental head.
Nail a single good shot, anyone can do that. It's a completely different thing to tell a story.
So welcome to the Pokemon Gold podcast, Matt.
Hi, James. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, great to have you on. With all our guests, we have the same question, so I'll start the same with yourself. How did you first get interested in the brilliant sport of football?
It's a great question, and the honest answer is I can't really remember. And the reason for me sort of answering that way is that I feel like football's just always been there. It's always been a massive part of my life. Massive part of my friend's life, my brother, my dad, and to a point where almost I wouldn't necessarily even think to sort of say I'm a football fan. It's what I am. It's in my blood. I think the same for a lot of people. It starts with, I guess, playing and being, and sort of being inspired to have a kick about when you're a kid with your mates or in the back garden with brother and dad. And it sort of grew from there. But yeah, I mean, it's just something that I've got loads of memories growing up. And typically, I can say the same for a lot of kids, every picture of me as a kid, I've, either got a football shirt on or a football, kind of under my arm. And it was the same for my brother and the same for kind of all of my friends, if you like, that were in my social circles as I grew up. So yeah, I can't remember where it started, but it's always been there. Mum, dad, then football.
Yeah. And you said just before coming on, you said you're originally from London. So what football shirts were you wearing?
All right. Well, I try not to go on about it too much, but I'm a Spurs fan. So
right.
Yeah, my mum's from South London and my dad's from North London. My love for Tottenham as a football team is different to kind of what I sort of try and do professionally, obviously with Lower Block, and really I guess that's why I'm more interested in the kind of subcultures that are sort of make up football culture in general, rather than just sort of being specific about certain types of fans. I think at the end of the day, there's lots of different types of fans. Lots of different clubs, but you all end up being the same. If you're interested in football, you got a love of football, you know, we're all the same. So yeah, so I would never wear, I wouldn't have worn any other shirts, but England, England and Spurs, that's all I grew up with.
Okay, well, we won't fall out as I'm an Arsenal fan, but...
A lot of my mates are Arsenal fans as well.
Yeah. And a lot of my mates are Spurs fans, so... So who would have been your favourite player growing up?
Well, I was born in the 80s, so fortunately for me, I had Gazza and Lineker were my sort of early... England and Tottenham sort of idols. But interestingly, you mentioned Arsenal there. It's like, you know, when you're a kid... you know, I'd sort of Rocastle, McManaman, Giggs. You know, when you're a kid, you just want to play. And me and my brother would recreate, you know, any goal we'd seen on sort of Match of the Day or on the old videotapes and just go in the garden and just play, just be whoever, you know, was sort of was banging in goals at that time. And of course, internationally, I remember Italia 90 quite well, but USA 94 was the big tournament where I would have been like 10, and England obviously weren't in it. So that's kind of what like a memory where I knew how much I loved football because I was just obsessed with Roberto Baggio, you know, that Italy kit, you know, Baggio's ponytail, I loved it. So I guess kind of as a kid it was Gazza, Lineker, and probably Baggio were my initial sort of crushes and, you know, my obsessions, if you like.
Yeah, that's not a bad start for the makings of a five-a-side, is it?
No.
We're a similar age then. And I think it was Wayne Rooney said his first World Cup memory was that 94 World Cup. And actually, Ray Houghton's goal against Italy for Ireland was one of his first memories. So yeah, I think there's something... there is something about growing up in that era and the kind of pre-Premier League that makes it very nostalgic, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I hear, fortunately doing what I do now, I speak to so many different types of football fans, different ages, different generations. And you only know what you know, right? But, you know, so lots of football fans are from an older generation. They pine for various reasons, for the, you know, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. I find that, like I say, we only know what we know, but I loved when the Premier League started, you know, I loved the kind of the rock and roll footballers that, so the money that came into the game at that kind of top, you know, that Premier League level, you know, I just thought it was amazing. I kind of, these footballers to me were bigger than pop stars and rock stars. So all of a sudden, you know, kind of the media obsession with what footballers were wearing, driving, how they were living, the access that, you know, they were getting to players. You know, as a kid, I was lapping all that up, and the boot deals. So a lot of people have a big problem with like kind of the commercialization of like sort of football. And I do see that from a point of view of like, you know, big stadiums and stuff now, like do lose a lot of atmosphere and things such as that. But in terms of, you know, kind of when I was a kid and just being obsessed with, you know, I wanted to wear the boots that my favourite players were wearing. I wanted to cut my hair, you know, I probably tried to grow a Baggio ponytail at some point. So, you know, I just thought, yeah, and I think, you know, people, I think Serge from Kasabian, I think he says it, that, you know, like the modern day footballers are the rock stars of today, you know, they're bigger, you know, and yeah, I don't have a problem with footballers making loads of money. I mean, I watch more football than I watch films. So, like, let them have the money. You know, I love it.
Yeah. We'll go on to talk about Lower Block and how, like, it doesn't really matter the level, your view of the rock stars down to the kind of grassroots. You kind of treat it the same. We'll get into that. But what is your kind of, you kind of touched on it, but what is your opinion on the Premier League or the state of football today? Do you treat it the same? Do you hark back to those early days, or as you said, it's just you consume it?
Definitely, I think, and you sort of would know as art, you know, as an Arsenal supporter, and I know it as a Tottenham fan that I cannot deny that, you know, the old White Hart Lane was just a better place to go and watch football. You know, you definitely had it just felt like a tight-knit community, felt close to the ground. Obviously, a lot of my mates are Palace fans, Selhurst Park. is fantastic for that. It's a proper, it feels like a proper community club. And I think though that you can't, you know, you have to jump on board. So if you're, when you're a big football club, and obviously you run, you are, they are businesses, they can't get left behind. So they have to evolve and kind of keep pace with all the other clubs around Europe or around the world that are doing the same thing. So bigger stadiums, more fans from around the world coming in to watch. And I just think that's fine. That's kind of up to them. And I think as a football fan, you know, now I've probably started to go and watch a little bit of lower league stuff with some of my mates, just as a cheap way of, you know, getting together and being able to have a beer and watch a game of football. You know, fortunately, you kind of, you know, I'm not like a kid anymore. You just want to, you know, buy like 50, 60, 70 pound kits every year and stuff like that. So I've kind of missed, I haven't bought a kit, you know, since I was probably in the teens, you know, so sort of missed out on all of that. But you can't control, football clubs either get left behind or they have to keep pace. And that's what, I don't have a problem with it. I think there's so much football. It's brilliant. You know, you can just, Saturdays and Sundays, you know, there's plenty of matches going on locally. You can go and watch lower league football. It's all unique and it's all different and it's all brilliant, you know. So, it's got its different tiers, hasn't it? And as long as the money is fairly distributed, I guess, and I think in this country we're not too bad at kind of making sure that the money is sort of goes down the football pyramid, but it could always be better, of course, you know.
So did you play? Do you still play?
I did play. I'm actually currently sitting here with a fractured bone in my leg. From playing most recently, but I never played to as a kid. You know, I'd probably be the same as any other or the majority. I played a lot. I never played to a particularly high standard. I was decent, you know, school, university level, and all that sort of thing. But you know, it was never going to go anywhere. But I think, like, most importantly, like, my love for football probably does start with playing the game. And I think football, so this is where the kind of the layers of sort of like football culture kind of come in, is that actually it's by playing football that I think you do learn a lot about, like, you know, yourself, you know, aspects of teamwork, communication, and to a certain extent, you know, rejection and resilience. Because I try and point out to a lot of people these days that, you know, there's nothing hurts more than being a 10, 11-year-old and being substituted, you know, and knowing that the thing you love most in life, you're probably not very, you're not the best at it, you know. So that kind of, in terms of sort of preparing you to get into the, you know, go into a workplace and get stuck into, you know, real life work, football, I think it's, you know, served me quite well, and it certainly served a lot of my friends, you know, pretty well in that respect. So yeah, I did play, and I still try and have a kick about now when I can.
Yeah, it's a great point. I suppose I was fortunate and unfortunate in some ways that I was a goalkeeper, so you're always picked even if it wasn't very good. It was just, oh, someone wants to be on goal, okay, yeah, be my guest. But I do, yeah, just even thinking about like 10s and 11s being substituted and not getting on, and I know that's still a problem now, but like, you're kind of, your dreams and your sense of fun is controlled by this adult who's on charge of your football team, isn't he?
Yeah, but it's not some, you know, I think, I mean, lots of people have different points of view on this, but, you know, I think, you know, when you're playing a sport like football, any sport, I think it should be that, you know, the cream does rise to the top. So I think the best should get picked, because that's how life works. You know, life isn't particularly fair. And you kind of, you know, if you're not succeeding in one area, it's probably up to you to look to succeed somewhere else. And unfortunately, a lot of football teams do have first teams, second teams, third teams, etc. So, obviously when just, you know, children are quite small and different, you know, they kind of grow at different rates, I think then, yeah, there's probably a fairness to sort of mix it up a little bit, level the playing field, so to speak. But, you know, once you're coming into your sort of like, you know, early teens, I think it's, you know, the best team should always be picked, because that is exactly how life works. And yeah, football actually reflects that quite well, really.
Yeah, plus if you don't succeed, hard work can get you where you want to go.
Absolutely, yeah, very true. And it, you know, I mean, I think a lot of people kind of, when you look at professional footballers as athletes, I think so, you know, football, I think, gets beaten by a bit of a stick by, you know, sort of certain people, areas of the parts of the media, people that don't like football. They always seem to forget that, you know, there's a lot of sacrifice and hard work that comes with becoming a professional athlete. And going back to the money point of view, no one becomes a footballer to get rich. That's a byproduct of committing and working hard and having perhaps some raw ability. So yeah, I'm firmly in the football camp for a lot of these points.
Yeah, I'm on your side as well. Which takes us on to your work and on Lower Block. I suppose I found it hard to kind of define it because it's a lot of things, but it's primarily focused on the visual and photography. But if you could tell us kind of the story of how it came about and what its focus is.
Yeah, no, great. And you know, actually, James, I mean, I'm quite happy that you can't define it because it's, you know, I'd like it to sort of evolve and become whatever it wants to be. But I think kind of, as you sort of briefly touched on the intro, my background working as a picture editor in media was that, you know, I'm not a photographer, I can't take pictures, but visuals are all around us, right? You know, whether it's photography or video, it's a great way of kind of capturing a moment or communicating something. And whether you're talking about newspapers or television, you know, imagery is kind of everywhere. And actually, with, you know, social media now, it's so important, you know, so that people are on point and on brand with stuff. And I wanted to kind of combine my industry experience with something that I kind of, like, it's not just that I love, but it was something that I felt like I kind of believed in and knew a lot about. And football, and that's where football kind of came in. And it wasn't like I say the act of playing football anymore, because I think, you know, once you're, you know, perhaps out of your 20s, 30s, that sort of dries up. It was the kind of the culture around the game, and I was very passionate about the culture around the game because of some of the reasons we've touched on, is that for so many people it's just always been there. And in different ways, it gives people a sense of community, a sense of belonging. It teaches them life skills. And I knew that kind of like taking something like photography, that actually there's so many subcultures within football culture that can be captured, you know, using photography, or have already been captured using photography. And it's just a case of kind of curating it and making sure that, I think, you know, football as a kind of as a culture, or the subcultures within that, they're not really reflected on in the same way as, say, for example, music culture is. It's like people just think of football as, oh, footballers earning too much money. But it's like, well, hang on a second. You know, everyone grows up playing, loads of people grow up playing football. People go and watch football. You've got the stadium architecture, you've got the kit design, you've got the high street fashion, you've got the music that's, you know, connect that sort of entwined in the game. So there were all these things, and I just thought that using the fact that I know photographers, I know photography, and I know how to commission photographers, and I'm passionate about photography as well. I just thought, well, here's a great way to start. You know, let's start with kind of documenting football as a culture, and that's kind of how Lower Block was born. And yeah, fortunately, I've got to work with some great photographers, lots of photographers. You know, they're football fans as well, so they're very supportive of the project. And we live in a world now, I think, where, again, social media is a big part of this. It's more and more and more. It's produce content. And I think what I was kind of looking to do is say, well, how do we kind of curate this a little bit better? How do we produce a product that, you know, kind of, actually, you know, you don't have to, it's not about selling hundreds of thousands of anything. It's just about curation and then getting that product into the right person's hands, and at the end of the day, you know, making a photographer a bit of cash, you know, because that's what makes the world go round. Whereas actually, you know, again, you see with social media, it's quite hard for photographers to make money. A lot of content's ripped off or shared and etc. So that was kind of how it started. But I want it to sort of continuously evolve, and I'm not really putting any kind of pressure or direction on where it goes. I just think it can be whatever it wants to be visually, and sort of progress it, really.
Yeah.
Where does the love of photography or that idea of curating it, where did that stem from?
Yeah, I've got an interest in journalism, like say media journalism, storytelling, and I just think visually there's a lot of aesthetics that are they're always around us. So I've always been interested in sort of design, fashion, photography. There's all these things, and fortunately all of those elements are also found within football, whether it's kit design or the hairstyle certain footballers got. And photography just lends itself as a great kind of like way of kind of capturing so many of these different aspects. And not just in football, but obviously it's a great way of sort of telling stories from anything around the world, sort of thing. I guess sort of I think appreciating when someone can take a good picture, and a picture that kind of captures that moment or tells that story in one or two sort of like single frames is a form of art. I'm a sort of journalistic background. I've always editorial sort of like visual storytelling, I've always thought is brilliant. And football's just got so much stuff that kind of lends itself to that. I mean, you could look at pictures of like George Best all day, kind of on and off the pitch. It's wonderful. Yeah. So, but you need great photographers out there capturing it.
Yeah. Saying that, and George Best is one of the pictures on the Instagram account, for example. We talked about kind of the nostalgia we might have for the 80s and 90s, and then you go further back to like Best and, the Busby Babes and that kind of thing. But it does feel like maybe that the kind of 80s, 90s to 2000s football culture, which we talk about often, became the kind of like football fans became stereotyped as perhaps not very bright, not interested in those more artistic things. So this is what you're doing, and you're speaking our language as well. Is kind of a recent phenomenon, this kind of producing magazines and accounts and photography and journals on football culture in all its forms, not the kind of stereotype we've had that football fans have been branded with.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, I think it's very hard to dive right into it all. But I think football is, to us as football fans, football's always been massive. And it would have been huge, in the sort of 50s and 60s and whatever as well. And it would have had its own culture and identity and a variety of types of football fan as well. And it's evolving constantly. And it's like, we're in a world now, obviously, it's continuously sort of like evolving. And, personally, I sort of think that's great. As a football fan, you kind of want to hang on to your bit of it that you identify with. And I think that's kind of important. The kind of cultured football fan has always existed. It's just that it's never really given any sort of like, no one really pays attention to it. Because, for example, if you take, for example, George Best, it's like, well, George Best opened up a fashion boutique, with Mike Summerby. There were other players, at the time that would have had similar sort of ventures. There's footballers, I know Leighton Baines, for example, is really big into photography. The fact that kind of like stadium architecture, I think, is such a big thing. People are designing these in kit design, massive. Football fan. You're sitting here in a Barcelona shirt. People, without realizing it, and this is why I think football's so big, is that without realizing it, football fans are more cultured than anyone realizes, and also have a very strong cultural identity. And I just think football's so big that actually we don't really talk about. It's never spoken about, like, kind of on a, you know, I'm trying to think of a good example where, you know, kind of other subcultures might be recognised, like teenagers queuing up to see, like, you know, their favourite new pop group or whatever. It's like, all right, okay. And people don't look at that in the same way as, like, oh, the hundreds of thousands that just go and watch football every week. They looked at it very differently. Mm. You know, I think that, yeah, just football is so big that actually it's never really broken down into subcultures. But it certainly has always existed, I think. And as I'm experiencing, there's lots of fans out there that do enjoy the various elements. Football's very tribal. You know, I think that not many fans, you know, are particularly interested in another club's sort of culture, if you like. But I've experienced, you know, from what I've been doing recently, you experience a lot of, like, football fans in the UK are interested in Italian football culture. I think a lot of that comes from Italia 90, mm-hmm. and the fact that Italians are very stylish, you know. So there's these, like, little links that you kind of pick up, in the same way as, you know, Australian and American football fans are very interested in European and specifically English football culture. Mm-hmm. So there's so much, you know. I just think it's a really, really kind of deep sort of treasure trove of stuff that you just kind of go through and pick it out. And there's something in there for everyone with football, I think.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, especially if you're coming at it from a creative and artistic background. Like, there's just so many places you can go with it. Go on, sorry. It also feels like they're kind of cross cultures. The meshing with music and fashion is becoming much more of a thing. And we see how clubs launch kits and how individual players are. I mean, we see, like, Jude Bellingham sitting on the runway at fashion shows and these kind of things. And it feels like there's much more of a crossover, and footballers are more willing to expose that part of their personalities.
Yeah, I'd agree. And, you know, and I think, you know, that it's that's great. Again, I just think that's probably always existed. It's just, like, it's just very accessible now. And, you know, I think, like I say, footballers are definitely they're the rock stars of the last sort of 20 years. They're bigger than film, the pop stars, film stars, you name it, you know. So if you can, you know, Gucci getting Jude Bellingham to wear their stuff, you know, why not? Brilliant. Like, you know, so, and you know, not every footballer, like, is going to be into kind of the fashion and music in the same way. But if they are, you know, I don't believe in this kind of, like, a footballer should just be a footballer, you know, sort of type thing. I think that's rubbish. I think, you know, they've got other interests and opinions, and, you know, and there's some fantastic characters out there as well, you know, that I think actually help showcase football in such a great light to non-footballing fans. And you mentioned Jude Bellingham there is one of them that, you know, I think even if you're not a football fan, chances are you are aware of Jude Bellingham, you know, at the moment, for various reasons. And yeah, like, I mean, I don't know anything about Jude. I don't know what he's into. Maybe he doesn't like clothes, but Gucci have paid him a lot of money. Who knows, you know? So, and the other night he wore those new Adidas Predators. You know, like, they're a throwback to the kind of the Predators, you know, back in our playing days. And I just think that sort of stuff's great. You know, it's lovely. Brilliant. Great move by Adidas. Get Bellingham wearing them. There'd be loads of kids buying those boots, you know, for sure.
Yeah. Just as we were chatting, like, I was thinking someone like Roy Keane probably would have been, like, in his days, or sometimes be kind of curmudgeon on TV, was like, I wouldn't go in for that stuff. And then the other week he's doing a shoot with Adidas. But he was on the overlap when Beckham was a guest, and he said, like, I never minded players doing that if they were doing it on the pitch. And I think we can kind of underestimate what players' interests can be. To jump into Lower Block, it's not just social accounts and online platforms, but it you're very keen on the physical aspect. Is it fair to say it's curated kind of photo essays, photo zines on different topics, and that covers a huge remit? I mean, just looking at your account, I mean, some of the photos go back well into the past. And then you have modern day stuff, but it's also got a kind of a uniform look and feel.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so I've been printing the zines for a year now, and I've done 25 editions in 1 year.
Wow.
Which sounds like a lot, but the point was, you know, there's actually a lot of photographers out there who have various projects, and it's like bringing these projects to light is, you know, it's a privilege, sort of, really. But they're not mass produced, you know, so they're small run, and the idea is that they're not particularly expensive to produce, and that means you can keep the price down, which makes it just an affordable way of getting photography out there to people. Because I think, you know, as a print hanging on a, you know, on someone's wall or a gallery wall, like, really, you know, they're worth a hell of a lot more. So getting them into kind of A5 zine format is just a great way of getting them into people's hands. And I think probably this is where my industry experience comes in. I'm aware of kind of the depth of, like, kind of archives and things like that are out there. So you've now got this new phenomenon, you know, everyone's a photographer because they've got their iPhone on them. They go to a game, and there's lots of people now shooting on film at football matches, taking in sort of like film cameras, which again, you know, is brilliant. The slight sadness for me is that a lot of that content is then just posted onto social media. Likes, clicks, build up their brand or whatever, get some more followers. And I sort of feel like that's a bit disheartening, I think. And I'm not a massive social media fan, to be honest with you. I have social media accounts because I need to promote the work that I'm trying to do. That's the bottom line, to be honest with you. But by kind of actually producing something in print, I think people are looking now for a bit of curation. They're looking for something analog. You know, it's like we're overwhelmed with, you know, mass amount of content, you know, sort of permanently accessible via different means of communication. So I think people are kind of craving a bit of a sit down with a cup of tea or a cup of coffee or a beer, flick through something, you know, like, I think that's, you know, get off your phone, stop scrolling and have a little look at something. And if one of the Lyle Block photo zines, for example, if you're a fan of that club or a fan of that era, or you just like that stadium that's featured, it's like maybe it becomes a bit of a collectible that you just hang on to it and you flip back through it. And again, you know, football, because it evolves so quickly, is that these are all snippets of time, you know. So, you know, in the last year, we did a couple of zines of a photographer last year on Man City winning the treble. And one of the zines was a focus on the Etihad. So he shot these wonderful pictures of the Etihad. So in 2023, which right now, perhaps people might say, well, I can go down there and see it, or so what? But in my opinion, and the photographer's opinion, it's like, that was a historic year for City. And now we have this wonderful collection of pictures, which are going to age beautifully, lovely pictures. And in 10, 20, 30 years, you know, when the Etihad has changed even more, and, you know, Man City are playing home and away against Paris Saint-Germain every week, here will be this wonderful, I just think it's about, like I say, curation's a really good word. And I think, but kind of almost kind of giving people that step back from just digital, you know, just mass exposure. You know, that's kind of important to me. I think for photographers as well, if you're going to protect photography as a kind of a way of visually telling stories, and, you know, photography needs to be printed. You know, it can't just be looked at on a screen. You know, it has to be celebrated. So yeah, that's kind of why the zines work like that in that way.
I mean, you're certainly singing off our hymn sheet. How successful has it been? Just because I know from our magazine how challenging the environment can be to print, and, you know, I have minimum print runs and shift copies, etc., and advertisement. But 25 editions in a year, I mean, it's working, would you say?
Well, I would say, to be honest about it, it's a graft in terms of every time, because of the tribal nature of football fans, and, you know, you're trying to reach an audience, Every time I print a new zine, you're sort of starting from square one, really, because you've got to go then and identify, try and get to that fan base and find the element of those fans that sort of are interested in like kind of photography or the kind of culture or collecting something. You know, they so yeah, each one is a graft, but it's not so much about kind of, so because it's not about producing a large volume of editions, and therefore it's not just about sort of trying to make money, it's about this kind of curated collection. So each new zine, whilst it's a graft, brings with it a new audience, and then part of that audience might take one or two other copies, and then every so often, you know, we'll get someone that will buy all of them from a different country, and that's to me is like, oh, brilliant. So it is hard. I don't think it's not, you know, you guys know as well as I do, it's you know, because there's so much free content out there and people are happy to give it away for free, and you're encouraged to give it away for free by, you know, social media platforms, people are reluctant to pay for stuff. But I kind of like stick to my guns and think, well, you know, each project, you start fresh, but there's a potential to reach a new football fan base. And there are cultured football fans out there. And you know, they will buy it, but you know, it's not about trying to become a millionaire overnight with these things. It's about doing something that you're passionate about. And yeah, from a kind of a social documentary kind of point of view, for me, it is important that football is celebrated, or you know, as a culture, and that I'm trying to contribute to that, if you like, by producing these. So yeah, it is, you know, it is as hard work as anyone, you know, work trying to produce something in print, you know, will tell you. And you know, I still do plenty of digital stuff, and I know that feeling of working hard on some sort of a feature or a post, putting it out online, and you know, getting hardly any, you know, the algorithms like stitching you up. But that's something that I was familiar with the industry I used to work in anyway. That, you know, there isn't really any rhyme or reason sometimes. You know, yeah. Facebook and Instagram can change their algorithms whenever they want, and you know, so you know, kind of, which again is why I think it's important to produce stuff in print, because you get it in the right shops, people see it, you know, and yeah, it's not what it's, the print industry obviously is not what it was like 50 years ago, but you know, I'm same as you guys, I'm sort of passionate about producing something that is actually a viable product.
What does a particular zine look like then, in terms of, you know, hardback, number of pages, what it might feature, one photographer, one team, one club, that kind of idea?
Yeah, so they do vary. They're all A5 in format, which is obviously sort of like, you know, fairly small, and page wise there could be anywhere between sort of like 30 and 50 pages.
Wow.
You know, I'd like to think they're nicely produced, so it's kind of like a nice paperweight and a sort of like a nice sort of like laminated finish on the cover, they contain sort of minimal text, so like an intro page or that sort of introduces the project and the photographer, captions where they're needed, because I think a lot of football fans actually know what they're looking at. They don't need to be told, you know, this is the San Siro on every page. But then in terms of the actual content, it's again, I mean, look, it can be anything, because if there's so many photographers out there who have shot stuff or are shooting things, and even if they're covering the same subject, these photographers will shoot differently. So it's about, there obviously needs to be a narrative, you know, something that ties the project together. And that could be, you know, just a specific focus on a stadium or a group of fans or a certain era, or even a kind of a certain style of shoot, you know, a photographer shooting in a certain way. Actually just published our most recent one, went live yesterday, and it's with a celebrated photographer called Steve Pike, MBE. Great photographer, photographed loads of like sort of bands back in the sort of like 80s, hence his MBE title. But he also went and shot the Leicester City Baby Squad, which was the Leicester City's sort of firm of that of the 80s, on a night out in Leicester. And the pictures are fantastic because they're all fashion wise, they're all wearing sort of, you know, Burberry and kind of like all it's just they're shot like rock stars on night out, brilliant photographs. And then halfway through the night, they're kind of plotting and scheming about the following day's match, which is away at Coventry. They all of a sudden appear in a load of knocked off Wham t-shirts, all with Wham written across them. And this is their plan for evading police detection the next day. You know, so it makes so this project is just, you know, one night out with the Leicester City Baby Squad. There's no violence in the pictures. There's nothing like that. It's just these pictures of these young guys kind of out on the beers, the fashion, the casual fashion of that era, and then this kind of fun, you know, kind of idea that they had to try and evade police detection. And that makes a really, really like wonderful, like sort of collection of pictures, not for every football fan. You know, I'm sure it's popular with football fans that are interested in casual culture. But then that sort of like difference differs massively. We've done a series with a photographer called Alex Amoros, who focuses on big sort of stadiums that sit within the kind of communities of the kind of towns or cities that they form a massive part of. So as a three-part series, we've done San Siro, Anfield, and the Camp Nou. And, you know, he goes and shoots these stadiums that just, you know, I don't know if you've ever been to any of them, but they're right, nestled right in the middle of like these kind of like these districts where, yeah, you know, same as a lot of football grounds, but where people live. So you turn a corner and all of a sudden there's this massive historical piece of brilliant architecture just sitting there, which, yeah, you know, means so much to those people that live there and that, you know, go there every week to watch a match. So, yeah, there's just so many elements of football that can be captured, you know, in photographic form, and that, you know, I sort of like love that, really.
Yeah, I'm just, I can't help scrolling through the Instagram. You mentioned about the archives. I mean, football of the past is a big feature of it, but is that your research? Are you researching the photographers? Are you just built up a knowledge over the years, or how does that process work?
I do have a knowledge of photographers, and I think my reputation probably helps in terms of the fact that, you know, photographers, and rightly so, are very wary of their copyright and how their work's going to be presented. And because these are things that I understand, I think that helps, you know, when they kind of, you know, working on these projects together. And, you know, you light the touch paper, you work with one photographer and other photographers hear about it and they come and they want to pitch a set of pictures they've got. I'm kind of inundated with projects. Kind of going back to the sort of, you know, your point about how well do the zines do, it's definitely something that I would probably think it'd be fair to say I have more recognition from peers rather than punters. So, you know, it's, I've more photographers getting in touch with me and wanting to pitch their projects than, you know, if I had a huge audience and a massive kind of production team, I'd probably be like, great, let's do them all. But yeah, the projects that I think are going to kind of either resonate with me or resonate with an audience that's accessible, you know. So it's that type of thing. But yeah, there's just so many wonderful photographers out there, and especially shot stuff that's archival. If it's being shot, you know, they buy into the kind of lower block project. It's just bringing those pictures back to life, and you know, otherwise those photographers are relying on, you know, kind of magazine or newspaper, you know, editorial licensing and, you know, and stuff like that. And it's like, well, I know from the industry that that's you know, they're paying less and less for repro sort of fees. So put it together in a little curated project. Photographers, luckily, they're not, photographers don't, similar to footballers, photographers don't become photographers to get rich. become photographers because they love taking pictures. Mm. And you know that there's some fantastic ones out there. So yeah, it's a privilege really to kind of work with them on these things, on these projects. And I'm always mindful that I want them to be happy and satisfied. And it's not, you know, it's not just about, well, you know, how many can we sell. It's a project that they go, yeah, I love that, you know, and sort of, like I say, helps build up that kind of curated library of editions, really.
Am I right in saying it's not just what you produce, but the individual prints, some of them can be for sale then, is that right?
Yeah. Represent a few photographers and offer a few of their kind of their prints. And again, that, you know, that's kind of a real privilege to be able to offer them as prints. But I can, you can sense that kind of economic climate out there. And I actually think in some ways the prints work well to serve as a way of serving to remind people how cheap the zines are, because you start lowering the cost of a proper photographer's print, you know, and people forget that, you know, photography is an art form, and you know, a lot of photography, you know, it's fairly unique. With words, you can rewrite someone's words, right? You know, but photography, you can't really just recreate a picture that was taken 40, 50 years ago or 20 years ago or whatever. And people forget that photographer, he might have sat in the rain, he might have been on that job for days, hours, you know, he might have been commissioned, or he might have just done it all, you know, they might have done it off their own back. So a print costing £100, for example, you know, professionally printed, like nice kind of archival print, to some people is like, ooh, you know, I don't want to buy, you know, I'd rather buy, you know, rip something off the internet or buy a cheap poster from somewhere. I'd say, right, fair enough, that's cool, that's up to you. Yeah, they do sell, but then they sort of like, I think they kind of help reflect that actually, well, these photozines, we're doing you a favour here, we're creating these like wonderful collections of pictures that are affordable, and you know, and you get 30, 40 pictures in there that you can sort of like flip through. You don't have to hang it on your living room sort of like wall and stuff like that, which prints, you know, that's kind of what you're buying them for, right? You know, as a sort of a centerpiece in a room type thing. So yeah, we do that as well.
I think it's amazing. And I think that idea of kind of the coffee table book, but it's all football and it may not be about a match. It's about fans. It's about architecture. It's about icons of the past. What has the reaction been from the photographers to the finished pieces?
Yeah, I mean, very positive. And, with printing, it's... there's always as it's things can go wrong, you know, and you have to get stuff reprinted, you know. So I have an obligation to the photographers to make sure they are happy with the final product, as much as an obligation to, you know, the sort of reputation of of Lower Block and what we're putting out there. But I think photographers photographers enjoy seeing their work published. You know, that's why, you know, they don't shoot, again, a photographer doesn't shoot pictures just to sort of bury them on their hard drive. You know, they want them brought to life, shown off. So yeah, from that point of view, it's been a really positive response. You know, and as someone who can't take a picture, I kind of feel like I wish I could do more for them. And you touched on there, James, the kind of the idea of like that sort of coffee table book, which, you know, in terms of sort of like one of the reasons why the zines exist the way they are, because I love the idea of a much larger edition coffee table book or a much sort of like heavier glossy magazine. But I had to make a decision quite quickly that it's like, well, how do you pay photographers? Mm. If that makes it quite hard to kind of like equally and fairly distribute, you know, because then it becomes a question of like sort of like licensing. And, you know, if you're producing a magazine, or a photo book, you know, you're going to need hundreds of projects to kind of like to sort of like facilitate that. So the zines allow it to be kind of very much like, right, I'm working with this photographer on this project, and that kind of keeps it nice and sort of separate. So I think that, you know, kind of that again was a big part of why they became photo zines, is it just makes it easier to kind of work one-on-one with photographers and build up a collection like that, rather than just one, say, annual or biannual kind of glossy, expensive to produce, perhaps. I don't know, because I've never priced it up, but imagine they get quite pricey at that end of things.
Yeah, and the beauty of football, as we found, is, I mean, we would love to be in a position to pay our contributors. We're just not, just the nature of it. But the beauty of having, the beauty of football and the universal language, as I always say, is like, we get contributors from all over the world who do it for the love of it. And that's the beauty of the sport, isn't it? They're happy to work with you because it's football.
Yes. Definitely. I think the big, again, another quite significant difference, I think, between photography and, say, like the written form of journalism is that, you know, if you want to write an article, you don't need, you know, you can literally just write it with a pen on a bit of paper. I think people tend to forget that, you know, a photographer that's gone out there and shot something, and there's a lot of, they have to spend a lot of money on kit and gear, you know, so as they're, and I know this from the, like I say, the industry, the sort of media industry, you know, they get paid less and less for people licensing their images, but the kit gets more and more expensive, right? You know, so it's kind of, it's a bit of a double-edged sword for them. So I'm very much on the side of protecting photographers, their copyright, but also making sure that where I can, and you know, it's hard, but like that I'm doing what I can to kind of compensate photographers, which again, the zines work, you know, I give 50% of everything goes back to the photographer with each zine that we produce. So every time someone buys a zine, they're helping me produce more, but they are paying that photographer for his work, or their work, sorry. So that's something I'm quite proud of, you know, and it again, it's not making anyone, not paying anyone's bills. It might pay them for a match ticket or a flight to another country to cover another football match.
Yeah, I think it's amazing. Before we kind of wrap up, and without wanting you to pick your favourites, what are some of the highlights of that you've produced since you began?
Well, I mean, that is hard to say. I mean, they all have quite special meaning, because, you know, I put a lot into each project, the work of a photographer, you know, creating it, and then obviously sort of selling it and marketing it.
Or maybe just two or three that would give you a scope of the different themes, maybe.
Okay. Yeah. So I think the three that kind of really kind of provide that scope would be the famous CFC, which is a Chelsea one with a photographer called John Ingledew. He's a Chelsea fan, top photographer. These pictures capture Chelsea fans from the 80s to the early noughties, so pre Abramovich. Includes, you know, kind of like Chelsea sort of skinheads, casuals, right through to that kind of like, yeah, sort of like early noughties sort of football fan. And they're all black and white, beautifully shot, brilliant pictures. And that was one of the first archival sort of zines that we produced. And John's name's quite big in the sort of photography industry. So that did lead to kind of a lot of other opportunities for me when they saw that John is sort of like working with Lara Block. Then a lot of other photographers started coming forward. After that, probably there's a brilliant, probably the most famous street photographer currently is a chap who goes by the name Boogie. I don't know if you've come across his work. He's quite big, and he shoots all sorts of different things, and he flew out to Naples when Napoli won Serie A, and there was loads of photographers doing the same thing, right? But Boogie went out there, you know, he just knows how to do street photography right, and it was captured these brilliant pictures of Napoli fans celebrating. So that made a great collection of pictures, and you know, he's a really well followed photographer, and obviously Napoli are a well followed football team, so that one worked quite well. And then probably there was one we did with a photographer called Danny Last, who is a big sort of like social media kind of photographer, if you like, and has built up an audience over sort of 10 years or so. Takes wonderful pictures, a lot of which he takes on his phone. And we did a collection. I did a collection with him just on his pictures from his years traveling around Italy. And I think the three of them sort of show the kind of like John's Chelsea set, archival, you know, old brilliant pictures, Boogie, something contemporary that's happened, kind of impactful. And then Danny kind of like represents that sort of, I guess, that new age photographer, you know, shooting on an iPhone, but traveling around the world. You still got to take a good picture. You know, you can't, you know, I've seen a lot of rubbish in my time. Hey, he takes a brilliant picture. And with football as well, I think, you know, you can't kid football fans. So if, you know, you can send a top photographer to cover football. If they don't know anything about football, they'll miss the point.
Yeah.
So yeah, crucially, these guys, they know football. They know what to look for. They know the types of fans. They know that it's about the kind of the colour, you know, the tattoos, the environment, the what are they drinking? What are they eating? How are they engaging with each other? And they capture that. All of those photographers that I mentioned there know how to capture that stuff. And that's the art, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we are an audio platform, but we will share links and everything. I still find it just brilliant to talk about visual and photography and what it does for the sport. So where can people find your work and order the zines?
Yeah, so lowerblock.com is where everything is published. And so we do online features there, and that's where the shop is. So zines can be bought directly from there. And we're on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, as variations of Lower Block, but quite easy to find. And we sort of push all of our content on there as well to try and bring as many people back to the website as possible and get as many eyes on these projects as possible. Really, that's my aim, is to make sure this work is seen and sort of appreciated.
Yeah, I can't recommend it enough. I think I find myself scrolling and scrolling, and I think the look of the harking back on and the contemporary stuff. What's next?
So we've got a few projects lined up, which maybe another one before Christmas, and then we've got a couple lined up straight after Christmas, but I won't say what they are just yet. So continuing to produce the photo zines is kind of like that's if you like what I'd like that to be, the bread and butter of what we do and how we support independent photography. And then if there's potential, and I think this is, again, hinges, and you'll know this hinges a lot on sort of the type of audience you can reach and the established audience that you manage to retain. Maybe there's other things that we can do with photography, different ways of bringing it to life and getting it into people's hands. And just taking it from there, really. And I think quite an important point, which a lot of football fans will understand, is that football clubs completely miss the point when they're trying to engage visually with their fans.
Yeah.
And I understand why, because if they can't control it and it's something that isn't necessarily on brand or brand safe, they're not interested. But football is largely supported by working class people. It's a form of escapism. It's a huge culture. And I'd love for some football clubs to come to Lower Block and say, look, can we do some projects with you and some of these brilliant photographers that you work with? Because we want some authentic content that our fans are going to understand, that's not this polished rubbish of, here's a load of pictures of, the boys training today. You know, great, who cares? I'm sick of seeing that stuff. It's the people, it's the stories behind the people and the fans. That's what people find engaging.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You kind of answered my last question, which was how the clubs have reacted. But I think we're seeing some try to engage, and we've had a few kind of guests on. We've seen some clubs try to engage with that more authentic people like yourselves, but I think they should all do more. Anything planned to visit Ireland, take anything from Ireland?
I'd love to. I mean, I'm open to sort of to people pitching, sort of projects they've been working on, for sure. There is a project on the Republic of Ireland in Italia 90. I'm trying to get over the line with a photographer. So there's some great stuff out there. And look, we Lower Block zines sell quite well in Ireland, So really, Lower Block has been built from kind of what I know as a kind of a male English you know, white football supporting like guy, you know, and somehow, you know, I want to expand that into as many different areas as possible, you know, so all football fans feel included and represented. You know, everyone plays football around the world, you know, so yeah. I mean, there's so many good projects out there, so many.
Yeah, well, this can be, we'll help you with a shout out for anyone from Ireland who wants to pitch in. But I love what you're doing, and photography is an art, it's a skill, you know, the guy who sits on the sideline or the stand or outside the pub snapping people, that is an art. But I think pulling it together in a story, curating it that you do, is also an art and a skill. So yeah, just thanks a million for joining us. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me, James. Lovely.
And that's it. A landmark episode for the podcast. Thank you if you stayed with us for all 30 editions. And join us next time on the Poma Goal podcast.